Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
This is Tim Staples of Catholic Answers. I'm excited to let you know that I also teach high school apologetics for homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. There are also recorded independent learning courses at homeschoolconnections.com. Whether you take apologetics with me, literature with Joseph Pierce, or philosophy with Bill Donahue, or any of the other 400-plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, it's a great way to get Catholic learning for your family.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and I think I misspoke last hour, and I won't review what I misspoke about. I'll just say this. This hour is for pro-choice folks. Why are you pro-choice? If you are a pro-choice person, if you believe in abortion in any stage of pregnancy or at any time, then you're a pro-choice person. At least, even if it's, you know, I only believe in abortion in the first trimester or something like that, yes, that qualifies, and you're welcome to call. And we'd love to talk with you about why you have made that choice to be a pro-choice person. We don't hide the fact that we are pro-life people. We are pro-life Catholics, in fact. But we'd love to have those conversations. We think it's very productive to have those conversations, and we invite your call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. And we've got a great, great guest for you to talk to about abortion today, Stephanie Gray Connors, internationally renowned pro-life speaker, the founder of Love Unleashes Life, the author of Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide, as well as Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth. Stephanie Gray Connors, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me back on, Cy.
The author of two more things, a book that will come out. You're doing a book on in vitro fertilization. That will come out sometime. And the author of a baby boy or girl, I don't know which, come on.
That's right. We don't know either.
Publishing date, August.
Publishing date August, yes. Although I feel like publishing date could be now.
you do feel that way. I think Marie might be feeling that way. Her publishing date for Junior is Junior. I should say Cyril. We all know that the baby will be named Cyril, whether it's a boy or a girl. It's going to be named Cyril. But that her publishing date is in September. Do you sometimes feel like it's yeah, she does. She looks tired today.
I'm tired every day.
I think she's tired of me though. I think that's it. Well, congratulations again on the new baby. Say something about the IVF book that's coming out, in vitro fertilization, because people might want to talk about that with you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, my kind of expertise is apologetics. It's how to argue, how to defend a point of view, and particularly using the Socratic approach of asking questions and making analogies or telling stories. And I've done that at the beginning of life with abortion and then end of life with assisted suicide. And as I was doing research on another topic, that of in vitro fertilization, I saw a great need to really help equip people to think wisely on that issue because there's a lot of confusion on it. And so my book will be taking the same style as my other books with apologetics, and it will be making both sectarian and non-sectarian arguments, you know, for anyone, even if they're not religious. I'll be talking about how in vitro fertilization threatens the lives of some preborn children in order to create other children. It really commodifies the human person, treats humans as objects. But then I dive deeper, and some people will say, well, what if you don't make too many embryos? What if you don't use sperm or egg sellers, but you just use a married couple's sperm and egg, does that make in vitro fertilization morally acceptable? So that's really then when I go into a sectarian argument explaining why, even in those narrow circumstances, it's still morally objectionable, and I kind of unpack that. And so I'm excited for it to come out. So I'm trying to get it written before the baby comes, and then I will release it after the birth.
Our number, 888-318-7884. Stephanie Gray Connors is our guest, and you are welcome to call if you are a pro-choice person. If at any stage in life you believe in abortion, for example, then you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Many people who set limits on what they when they will tolerate abortion will say to us, I'm not sure if I'm a pro-choice person. But in fairness, I say that. Look, if you believe in abortion, you know, I only believe in abortion with the morning after pill, for example, or something like that, or in the very earliest stages. Still, we would say that that's a pro-choice position, wouldn't we, Stephanie?
Absolutely. And we want to hear from those people to be able to unpack what the pro-life perspective is and really understand why they think it would be acceptable very early in pregnancy or by a particular means such as a chemical means. So we welcome and invite that perspective.
888-318-7884, our number. We hold the phones for pro-choice folks today. So thank you for all of our many pro-life listeners and supporters for leaving those lines open so the pro-choice people get a chance to call. 888-318-7884. Sometimes when we do these programs, people are like, I'm amazed at how many pro-choice people listen. Well, there are lots of pro-choice Catholics, for example, probably sitting in church with you on Sunday, many pro-choice Christians. Those are all welcome to call, but also we have many secular listeners as well. All welcome. 888-318-7884. Is in vitro fertilization an issue of that's related to abortion? I mean, it seems to me that I don't know if you've had this experience, Stephanie, but I don't find anybody who's ever surprised that the Catholic Church is opposed to abortion. And there's never anyone who goes, I didn't know that. I never meet anyone who's surprised that the Catholic Church is opposed to suicide. No one ever really? That's. But I meet all kinds of people who are shocked that the Catholic Church is opposed to in vitro fertilization. So how are these related?
Yeah, that's a great question because you're right. A lot of people think, well, wait, if the church is all about creating life and seeing children as a blessing, then wouldn't using IVF be something the church supports? And one of the problems amongst many, but one of the problems with IVF is it's directly related to abortion because some preborn children are aborted through IVF, whether it's prior to implantation or after implantation. So with IVF, babies aren't created through sexual intimacy, but are created by a third party, some type of scientist, medical professional in a lab who puts sperm and egg together in a petri dish. And then those children, many are sometimes created, sometimes 10, 15, even 20 embryos. Well, you can't implant all of those embryos at one time. So usually the embryos go through a weeding out process where one or two will be implanted immediately. Maybe five or so will be frozen for possible use for implantation at a later date, but that isn't often guaranteed. Then you could have 5 or 10 embryos that die in the process that are just disposed of right away, and that kills them, or they're used for scientific research, which is like as evil as experimenting on Jews during the Holocaust. It's experimenting on a human body. And then even when some embryos are implanted, once the baby starts to grow in the mom's body, that mother might choose to have prenatal pregnancy testing. And that testing might show her child has Down syndrome. And there have been cases where couples desperately wanted a child, pursued IVF, had an embryo implanted, found out they have a Down syndrome child, and then they've had an abortion of that particular child. So we see with IVF the destruction of human life in some cases upon its creation before implantation, and in other cases when the resulting child isn't the standard that the parents wanted, which reinforces the kind of manufacturing element of in vitro fertilization, that it's kind of that commodification. When you buy something in the store, you want it to be in pristine condition. And if it's not, you return it and you expect a replacement. And so sadly, when you have that mentality, when it comes to the creation of life that we're manufacturing, we're trying to get a certain specimen, then if that specimen doesn't line up and you have a child who's quote unquote less than perfect, in some cases, certainly not all, but sadly, some people will then end that child's life because of some genetic anomaly.
Stephanie Gray Connors is our guest. And if you are a pro-choice person, we welcome your call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We'll start with Casey in Chicago, Illinois, listening to EWTN Channel 130 on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Casey, go ahead with your question for Stephanie.
Hey there, Stephanie. So it's a funny conundrum because I definitely don't see myself as pro-choice. I believe in life, you know, at conception. But where I struggle as a Catholic is I understand a woman's need in the case of rape or incest, or in the life of the mother when she has other children that need that mother. And I had to pose the question to my child's religion teacher in junior high, because I struggle with that as a mom of three. Gosh, what if I had another and having that baby would take my life away from my existing? So I think as a woman, a mother, a faithful, it's a really hard struggle to put that into perspective with our faith.
I mean, certainly I can't even imagine, you know, being a mother now, leaving my child orphan. So that's right. Never something that we want to envision happening. Maybe I could ask you this. If someone wasn't pregnant, is it still possible that their life could be ended and their husband left a widower and their children orphaned? Like if a woman just develops
absolutely.
Cancer?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And would you acknowledge that, let's say it's not the case of cancer, let's say you have someone, a woman who has some serious heart condition, and unless she gets a heart transplant, she will die, leaving her husband a widower and her children orphaned. Now, let's say that the wait list is so long, there is no way for her to get a heart that she would be able to survive long enough. And so she thinks to herself, okay, I've heard in China that the Chinese government are arresting practitioners of Falun Gong, who are people who espouse a particular spirituality. And the Chinese government is arresting these people and actually harvesting their organs on the black market. Mm. So would it be ethical for the woman who can't get a heart in America to fly to China, go kind of in the black market, find a surgeon over there who will take a heart from a Falun Gong practitioner and implant it in the woman who needs the transplant so that she can return to America and not leave her children orphaned? Would that be ethical?
Heavens no.
Correct. Right. So I mean, you and no. I agree.
There's...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what that little thought experiment or analogy shows both you and me, which we're on the common ground on that, is that we acknowledge, as terrible as it would be to leave your children orphaned and leave your husband a widower, that we can't do just anything to avoid that tragedy from happening, that there are certain things that are off limits to us, such as unethically harvesting organs from someone. And that's clear in that case. So then the situation becomes, what if a pregnant woman's life is in danger? So I would say the same standard applies, that there are certain things that are off limits to us. Just as it's unethical to harvest someone's organs, it would be unethical to directly and intentionally end one's child's life through abortion. Now, saying that abortion is off limits to us, as tragic as it would be if the woman died and her husband's left with the children, as tragic as that would be, and as much as abortion is off limits to us, it doesn't follow that there's nothing that can be done. So when a woman's life is in danger, there typically are alternatives to abortion that can be pursued. And sometimes we can save both the mother and the child. Other times we don't have the technology to save the child because the baby's very young. But there's a big difference between directly killing the child and not being able to save the child. What are your thoughts on that?
I would totally agree. Totally agree with that. Completely. You know, and if my daughter, God forbid, came home pregnant, there would be no option. We'd have the baby, we'd raise it, we'd find an option. You know, as hard as that would be, but I just, you know, as a mom, you struggle, right? I don't know how I feel, you know, if I have this baby, and then how does my husband look at this baby and love the baby, knowing that, you know, the baby took mommy, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's a hard moral to live with, I think. And I agree. I'm definitely not, but it's just, it's a struggle. It's one of those personal things that I do struggle with in my own confession. And, you know, it's selfish. And I guess that's why I'm human.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, Casey, you know, it's important to remember too, that whenever we hold a certain worldview, it doesn't mean every aspect of living that view out is going to be easy. In fact, typically what it means is there's going to be very hard times. And what comes to mind is one of the saints in our church, Saint Gianna Beretta Mola, who got married later in life, had, I think it was 3 children. And with her 4th pregnancy, there were complications and they were concerned about her life being in danger. And she said, if you have to choose, choose the child over me. And ultimately it came to, she wasn't able to survive, but they were able to, the baby was able to survive. And yes, on one hand, it's a terrible sorrow and grief that her husband went on living without his wife, but he also knows that his wife is a saint, you know, that in a sense she was a martyr who was willing to give her life for the other, which is, at the same time as all of this is very difficult, it's a reminder to us, this world we're in is not our home. We are pilgrims on a journey to another home. And why we're here is to learn to love so we can love perfectly in that next world. And what is love? I mean, the scriptures tell us greater love has no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. And so there's an understandable grief and sorrow that any man would have in losing his wife. And yet there is something to be celebrated, which is to know that the goal of any husband and wife is to get their spouse to heaven. And job well done. You know, she's in heaven and praying and interceding that her husband will one day join her. Doesn't make it easy. Doesn't make it without grief or sorrow, but it puts a broader perspective on even what our life is for.
And I got to leave it there. Casey, thank you so much for the call. It's a pro-choice open forum. If you are pro-choice, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Why do we need to pray? We don't pray because God needs our prayers. We pray because we need God's grace. And every day when I face the day, I realize I have no idea what I'm doing. And I need God to walk me through my day, step by step, giving me the grace, the counsel, the love, the encouragement that enables me to glorify Him in everything that I do and become the person He wants me to be. Prayer is my lifeline.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Lots and lots of folks who listen to this program are pro-choice folks. And maybe you're just catching us by chance and you are a pro-choice person and you'd like to call. We love to have those conversations, not hiding at all the fact that we are entirely pro-life. Your call is welcome here if you are a pro-choice person. If you'd like to argue a point, that's welcome. Or if you're just, as our last caller, just maybe struggling over what the church has to say and what basic moral teaching has to say about treating life unborn, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884 with your question, with your argument, 888-318-7884. Stephanie Gray Connors is our guest. She is an internationally renowned pro-life speaker and has debated these issues many times and loves to have these conversations. She is the founder of Love Unleashes Life and the author of a couple books, including Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide. Again, holding the phones for pro-choice folks. So if you are a pro-choice person, you'd really help us out, actually, if you'd give us a call, 888-318-7884. Up next, we go to New Jersey, listening on 89.3 FM, Ann in New Jersey. Thanks so much for your call. Go ahead with your question or comment for Stacey Gray Connors.
Stephanie, just called me Stacey.
This is the worst day for me. I am having a terrible day. I apologize. Go ahead with your question. It's Stephanie, not Stacey, but go ahead with your question.
Okay. Hi, my name is Anne. I'm calling from New Jersey. I converted to Catholicism 3 years ago, but I guess by your definition, I would be pro-choice because I'm not comfortable with the church recommending to non-Catholics that they don't get an abortion. I guess maybe I need that unpacked. For example, some people who, if they don't believe in the church's reason to be against abortion, they're against abortion for another reason that doesn't agree with the church. And so I just, that's why I'm not comfortable with it, for one thing.
Sure. I appreciate your call, Anne. And I think you raise a valid point. And maybe to unpack that, one of the things I could ask you to consider is, are there other teachings that the Catholic Church has that aren't directly related to abortion that you believe people who aren't Catholic should embrace?
Oh gosh, that's a complicated question. Can you elaborate on that? Because that's a
sure. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, let me maybe give an example. So even if we take the Ten Commandments, you know, the church teaches, and not just the Catholic Church, I mean, any Judeo-Christian would teach this, but certainly the Catholic Church teaches you shouldn't steal and that you shouldn't kill. So do you mm-hmm. think that a civil society should have laws against stealing and killing, even though those are standards the Catholic Church holds as well, and the civil society might not be a Catholic society? Do you still think there should be laws against
yes.
stealing and killing? Okay.
Yes.
So then what that shows is we recognize there are certain fundamental truths that while a particular religion or denomination may embrace, someone who doesn't hold that denomination or religion can still reasonably embrace those views. And we've agreed that killing and theft and the wrongness of those two things are two examples. So then when it comes to abortion, the question is, what does abortion do and who does it target? And what I'll often point out is that when a woman gets a negative pregnancy test, she never goes to an abortion clinic because the negative test is basically telling her it's just your body, no other body here. But why, when a woman gets a positive pregnancy test and doesn't want to be pregnant, does she consider going to an abortion clinic? Well, the positive test is telling her it's not just your body anymore, there's another body present. So what does abortion do to that other body? And very clearly, it directly targets the body for destruction to end the life of one's offspring. So if we believe any civil society should have laws against theft of property that's not even a person, or laws uh-huh. against killing, let's say, a 10-year-old, then wouldn't it logically follow that well beyond just a Catholic view, from a human rights perspective, a civil society should have a law against a parent directly ending the life of their preborn offspring?
Yeah, that follows. But doesn't the Catechism say that the Catholic Church doesn't undertake to make recommendations to people over whom it doesn't have authority, however regrettable it might be that it doesn't have authority over them?
I'm not sure of that specific reference. I've not heard of that. If it were to be there, and if you actually have the number, I'm open to hearing that. But if that
no,
were to
I
be
forgot.
There, okay, no worries. My understanding is, let's hypothetically say that's there, that would relate more to aspects of the faith, you know, reception of communion. Who's eligible to receive communion? Are you in a state of mortal sin or are you not? Are you a member of the Catholic Church or are you not? There are certain things that pertain to fundamental aspects of the living out of the faith that would apply to people that are members of the church. But then I would say there are certain truths that go beyond the faith that are just really from a human rights perspective. So if we think theft is wrong, if we think homicide is wrong, if we think rape is wrong, for example, you don't need to be Catholic to agree that all those things are wrong. So then what I would suggest is, although Catholics are taught that abortion is wrong, someone doesn't have to be Catholic to come to the conclusion that biologically the child in the womb is a separate entity from the mother, is actual offspring from the mother, and therefore has a right to protection from his or her parent, not harm being inflicted upon him from his parent. And therefore, abortion ought to be rejected from that perspective, whether someone is Catholic or not. Does that help?
It does, but I still have to do more reading and unpack, I guess, because I feel like if the church herself does not tell non-Catholics that what they should do with their bodies, then like the power of numbers in a voting type of democracy for Catholic people to be against non-Catholics getting abortions is banding together to do something that the Catholic Church herself isn't trying to do. You know, I just need to read some more probably.
Sure. And I would recommend if you go to my website, which is loveunleasheslife.com, my book is on there that specifically addresses abortion. So hopefully that will help you. Trent Horn, who works with Catholic Answers. Great. Yeah. So please go there. And then Trent Horn works with Catholic Answers and he's kind of teased this issue out in depth and explained it. But I would point out with just the last little remark you made about, you know, can the Catholic Church tell someone what to do with their body? That's why when it comes to pregnancy, the fundamental question is it only one person's body or are there two people's bodies? And again, the very fact that a woman is pursuing abortion indicates there's another body present. And so therefore, do we have a responsibility as mothers to meet the basic needs of our offspring? And as a civil society, whether someone is in a Catholic culture or not, any civil society would say parents have to meet the basic needs of their offspring. And that for the born child is food, clothing, and shelter. And that for the preborn child would be the food and the shelter of the placenta, the uterus.
Okay, this is going to be hard. I have to get more informed on the issue, but thank you so much for getting me started.
Thank
You're
you,
welcome.
Anne. Thank you very much for your call. That's why we love having these conversations. Anne, thank you so much. Stephanie Gray Connors is our guest. If you're a pro-choice person, this hour has been reserved for you. 888-318-7884. Only pro-choice folks. Rest of the hour on Catholic Answers Live. 888-31 Truth.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
According to divine command, we should give God worship, but how do we know if we're doing it right? Is worship a form of self-help? To make me feel better? A form of social activism or even a commodity? Or is it something that transcends all of those? In Real Religion, How to Avoid False Faith and Worship God in Spirit and Truth, Father Jeff Kirby cuts through the misguided modern notions about God and religion and takes you back to the foundation for true worship, God's revelation about himself. From his first contact with his chosen people to the culmination of his revelation in Jesus Christ, God shows us what religion is supposed to be like and how to make the practice of it a lifelong virtue in our lives. Order your copy of Real Religion by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Coming up tomorrow on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, what was your first job and how did it define you? That's tomorrow on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, our favorite ukulele-playing pro-life speaker, Stephanie Gray Connors, who has played the ukulele for us before and almost had time to do it at that break, but we got to it too late. Sorry, we didn't get to hear the ukulele, but next time maybe. Lots of folks on the line for you now, though, and it's this hour is for pro-choice people. If you are a pro-choice person, you're welcome to call. We'd love to have these conversations. As a matter of fact, I have to say I have a little bit of pride about this. I mean, I hope that it's healthy and good pride and not bad pride, but I don't think you hear these conversations anywhere else in media. I think you got to go to Catholic Radio to get conversations where pro-choice people are allowed to call, make their points, have an adult conversation with people who respect them. I don't see any news outlets doing this. They've got hours and hours on cable TV, and they don't do this where they have respectful conversations like this. So I want you to know you're welcome. Stephanie Gray is here, and she's happy to have these conversations with you. As a matter of fact,
cancel culture here.
No cancel culture, right. And I say this with confidence, no matter how hard your challenge is, we want it here. And I say that with confidence because I don't have to answer the question. Stephanie does. Let's go to St. Louis, Missouri, watching on YouTube. William in St. Louis, Missouri. Thanks for your call, William. Go ahead with your question or comment for for Stephanie. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. So it's basically... does the Catholic Church distinguish between degrees, saying like the term in which an abortion is exercised? So very early, midterm, very late term, are those distinguished? And then the question would be is contraception tantamount to abortion?
Okay, let's take them as two separate questions then. We'll start with the first one.
Sure.
Is there a moral distinction as far as the Catholic Church views it from a late-term abortion to, say, a very, very early-term abortion? Are these morally distinct things?
Yeah, that's a great question, William. And I would say the question for the church is not how old is the victim, but what is the victim? In other words, is the person whose life is ended a member of the species Homo sapiens? And so because a pregnant woman is human, because her partner is human, and because they are of a species that reproduces sexually, which means in that species, of any species that reproduces sexually, life begins at fertilization. It means the moment of conception or fertilization, you have another human being who happens to be offspring of the male and female. So therefore, once you have a member of the human family, it is objectionable, it is unethical, it is morally wrong to end that innocent human being's life. So whether that is, you know, 5 days after fertilization by preventing implantation in the uterus, or whether that's 5 weeks right before brain waves have been detected, but right after the heartbeat's been detected, which is at 3 weeks, or whether that's at 5 months, in all of those cases, because the victim is human, the act of abortion is equally wrong. Between the first, second, and third trimester, all you have is a change in age, which is reflected in a different level of development, a different size, but the very identity of that individual is what remains the same over time.
Stephanie, the reason I wanted to do these separately is I want William to respond to that.
Good point.
Is that acceptable to you, William? Did that answer your question, or did you have a follow-up to it?
Yes, I understand the perspective. I think my follow-up question would be, in the case of 5 days after, the sexual act takes place, the sperm has not entered the uterus. The process is in the works, but in that case, would the life be generated?
So you're saying, I don't know if your timing is right. Maybe Stephanie knows more about the science than I do, but you're saying sperm and egg have not met yet. Is that right?
I don't really understand the intricacies of it, but if that's what she was saying, then...
Okay, so...
Sure, yeah. I can kind of explain that a little more. Actually, I think we need to distinguish when sex occurs from when conception occurs, because a couple can have sex and sperm be placed through the sexual act in the woman's body, but there be no egg that has yet been released by her ovaries. So in that case, you have sex, but you don't have conception or fertilization. But it's possible that a couple could have sex on a Monday, and there's no egg that has yet been released, but an egg is about to be released, which means the environment of the woman's body is getting ready for that, which means the sperm is able to live in her body for several days. So that on, let's say, Wednesday, she might release an egg, her ovaries would release that egg. And because the sperm has been able to survive in her body, it's, let's say, on the Wednesday where suddenly the sperm fertilizes the egg. That occurs in the fallopian tube. And it's at that moment where you have conception or fertilization, and that's when life begins. So life doesn't necessarily begin at sex, but it does begin at fertilization, which may occur when sex happens or may occur a couple days later. But if we're talking about sperm actually meeting egg, then biologically and scientifically, you now have genetic offspring that are uniquely different from the parents, but related to them. The way biology works is that that child doesn't stay in the fallopian tube for 9 months. The baby moves through the fallopian tube and takes about 5 or so days to get into the uterus, and that's where the embryo implants. But life doesn't begin in the uterus. Biologically, it begins in the fallopian tube, and the movement into the uterus is really just a change of location, because that's the ideal environment for long-term gestation, which would be the remaining, you know, 9 months of the pregnancy. Does that help clarify things?
One more follow-up question on this point. So, I'm not really sure how this works, but the morning after pill, is that preventing the life from being generated, or is that ending the life at such an early stage?
I have to say, William, I thought we were heading towards this because of the connection with the contraception. So is the morning after pill contraception, or is it abortive?
Great question. And I would say that depends on whether the woman's body has released an egg or not. So if the egg has already been released, then the morning after pill cannot suppress ovulation because it has already occurred. And so one of the concerns is that if her own body physiologically has advanced to a certain point, then the concern is that taking the morning after pill could change the lining of the woman's uterus, making it inhospitable to implantation. And so that's where it could sometimes cause an abortion if it impacts her body after fertilization has occurred. But because a lot of women, sadly, haven't been taught how to track the physiology of their body and their own cycles, they won't often know if they've ovulated or not. You can know that, but a lot of women aren't taught that, or they're on the birth control pill, so they're masking that or suppressing that. So some methods of birth control, like the morning after pill, even the birth control pill, may cause an abortion, or they may not. It depends on what's going on physiologically in the woman's body. So even with the birth control pill, a woman takes that, and if you read the medical literature on the pill, it's described as typically having three methods of action. Method one is to suppress ovulation so that if she has sex, the sperm in her body have no egg to get to. But that sometimes fails because no method of birth control is perfect. And so sometimes you have what's called breakthrough ovulation, where even though the woman is taking the pill each day, an egg is still released. And that means if she has sex, the sperm in her body might swim to the egg. So that's where the second mechanism of the pill kicks in, which is to try to change the cervical mucus in her body so that when sperm are swimming up through her reproductive organs to get to an egg, they have a harder time getting further up the reproductive tract because the cervical mucus makes it difficult for them to swim higher up. But that sometimes fails. And so the third mechanism of the birth control pill is to change a woman's uterine lining to make it thin rather than its normal thickness. And we know that this occurs because women who are on the pill will talk about how when they take the pill, they have lighter periods. And when they get off the pill, they have heavier periods. And so the change in flow is indicative of a thin or thick uterine lining. And so if you have a thinner uterine lining, what that means is if there's been breakthrough ovulation, if sperm have managed to swim past the cervical mucus and get up to the egg and fertilize it, that in a week's time, when that newly conceived human being tries to implant in the uterus, then that third mechanism might come into play, which would prevent the child from implanting in that thin lining rather than the normal thickness, and that baby could bleed out in what would be a very early abortion. Now, the woman probably would not visually detect that because the baby's so young, it would just look like a period. But the reality is, even if she's not aware of it, this risk exists. And so by analogy, I would say, look, if you're working in a demolition of a building and you're about to blow it up and someone says, is the building clear or is someone still in it? If you don't know for sure that the building is empty, you have to err on the side of caution. You have to pause the plans to detonate, and you have to make sure the building is completely empty of any innocent party. And so we have to err on the side of caution in this particular case.
And William,
is that helpful?
I actually have to leave it there, Stephanie, because I have to go to a break. So I'm just going to have to assume that that was helpful to William. I really appreciate the opportunity for that entire primer. Before we go to the break, I got to let you know the store-wide sale is ending this weekend. So if you want to get those prices 10 to 25% off, in some cases more than 25% off at shop.catholic.com, you got to go there before this weekend. Shop.catholic.com.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
He is only one of four popes honored as the great.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Leo I was pope at a time when Roman civilization was being overrun by barbarian armies. He stood as a light in the darkness and even saved the city of Rome from destruction by Attila and the Huns. Leo died in 461.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Killett, your host, Stephanie Gray Connors, our guest. When she says about, you know she was a Canadian, but now she's a Floridian and happy to take your calls. 888-318-7884. We're going to Omaha, Nebraska now. Spirit Catholic Radio. Samantha, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question or comment for Stephanie.
Hi. So I just want to start off by saying thank you for having me. But also, I guess my biggest issue when it comes to, I guess, just abortion in general and just looking at it in terms of political sense is it's why should the government have a say on what I can do with my body? And then two, if, you know, when people say, oh, we're so pro-life, well, okay, you're so pro-life, but what about all of the life that's already here, that's already alive, and living in foster homes, living in the system, and living in these awful homes or orphanages, and have nobody to care for and take care of them, and oftentimes grow up and have severe attachment issues? So what about those lives? So, and then we have, you know, women who end up do getting abortions. You know, I don't feel like any woman wants to go and get an abortion. I feel like they are in an impossible situation and feel like they have no other choice. I don't think anyone's just one, like, oh, I'm just going to go do it and, you know, get a punch card and, you know, but I think that for, women, it's very hard for them to make that decision. And I think that when we look at that, well, why are they getting an abortion? Well, because we have so much going on in our society, poverty, the mistreatment of, you know, people of different races, racism, and other issues that can prevent, you know, families from even being able to have children. And those are societal issues that we need to fix as well. So if we're pro-life, as the Catholic Church says they are, then why isn't the Catholic Church doing a better job at making it so women will want to actually have babies and not feel like they need to get an abortion?
Great, Samantha. Mm. Thank you. Stephanie?
Yeah, thanks so much for all those questions, Matt. That, you know, maybe we'll start with where you began. The first point about, you said, you know, on other issues, we don't allow the government to tell people what to do with their bodies. So I would maybe ask you to consider that perspective. Is that true that the government never tells people what to do with their bodies? Does the government have laws against rape?
Oh, I'm sorry. I put Samantha on hold. It was my fault, Samantha. I apologize. Go ahead.
Okay.
That's fine. No, I mean, yeah, but I think when you look at rape and abortion, those are two very different things. As
well, what I
want
to
teach. There's a big difference there.
Sorry, go ahead. What was that point? I didn't hear you.
I'm just saying, as someone who's been raped, I would say there is a big difference there between rape and abortion.
I mean, certainly I'm sorry for you having gone through that suffering. I have several friends that have experienced that. So I just extend my regrets and sympathy to you for having had faced that. So I realize bringing that up is wading into an area that's very sensitive for you. So as I maybe try to clarify my point, if that's too difficult for you, by all means, tell me if you just want me to move to the next question you asked. I think I'd be correct in, oh, go ahead.
Sorry, I was saying no, it's fine. You can talk about it, and thank you for your condolences.
Sure, sure. So, you know, I think it's safe to assume, and you'll probably agree with me here, that what you can agree with me on is that what makes rape so vile is that one person is using their body to harm another body. And so if we can agree with that, what that shows is when we have laws against rape and when we have consequences for people who break that law, we're acknowledging that the government is saying to the rapist, you can't do just whatever you want with your body. If what you're doing with your body is harming someone else's body, then we as a government are going to step in and we're going to stop you. So at least to that point, would you agree with me?
No, I would say that it's not really the person who's like the rapist. It's not, I don't think the issue with rape is, oh, it's what they're choosing to do with their body. I think it's the issue with rape is the fact that they're taking advantage of someone else's body. I think that's where the
Correct.
Core issue is, not with the choice that they're doing.
Yeah. So what they're doing with their body is they're taking advantage of someone else's body. Exactly. And that's what makes it wrong, is they don't have a right to harm, destroy, violate, and so forth, someone else's body. And so the question then with abortion is a pregnant woman involving just her own body by her actions, or is another body being harmed? And very obviously, if she wasn't pregnant, she wouldn't be pursuing abortion, right? So clearly, there's another body there. That's the body she wants removed. And so the question is, what about that child's right to his or her own body? And therefore, wouldn't it be wrong for the mother to destroy the child's body, to violate that child's body, to dismember that child's body? What would you say in response?
I guess it just, to me, I don't see it as being a child at that point. I see it as being a cluster of cells. And to me, it's, I don't officially see that as being life at that point. I would see it as just as growing of life. It's getting to the point of life, but it's not essentially life. I think that question there, it's hard to fully answer because it depends on, well, when do you think that life begins?
And right. So when would you say?
when the baby is able to survive with homeostasis, you know, when the baby is able to live outside of the mother's womb. I know that the child is dependent on the mother for, you know, feeding and shelter and all of those other things. But I mean, just living outside of the womb and being able to breathe on its own, that is when life begins.
So, I mean, at this point with advancing technology, that's generally around 24 weeks pregnancy. There have been some babies that have survived at 21, 22 weeks in incubators, but that's very rare. Usually viability is around 24 weeks. So does that mean then you're okay with abortion up to the 6th month of pregnancy?
Personally, I only think it should be within the first trimester. I think anything after 3 months, that's a little too far.
Okay, so just to kind of tease out then what you've said, there is what you're saying is certainly the more common view to only support abortion the first 3 months of pregnancy, but I would say it's inconsistent with another view you hold, that if your view is that you're not a life until you can survive outside the mother's body, then that means you're not a life until 6 months, which means one should reasonably and consistently support abortion to the 6 month mark. But if you only support abortion up to 3 months, then that is kind of revealing or showing that you must have a sense that even the inability to survive outside the womb doesn't take away the fact that at 3 months and 2 days, we're dealing with offspring of the mother. That offspring is young, immature, incapable of surviving outside the womb, but is still another individual. And so that also means even before 3 months, that offspring is young and immature, incapable of surviving outside the womb, but is still different from her body. And so when we try to wrestle with the question, when does life begin? What I often tell people is, setting aside religion, we actually need to go to science to tell us that. Religion can tell us how to treat human beings, but science tells us what is a human being. So that if you, you know, are, I don't know, walking in a grocery store and you see a slab of meat on the ground, and you're trying to decide, did the butcher drop a piece of meat off his tray, or did someone just commit homicide and leave a body part on the ground? We test the meat to determine, is this a piece of the cow or is this a human being body part? And so what we need to know is, when fertilization has occurred, are we dealing with a human being? And if the parents are human, then the answer is yes, we're dealing with another human. And then the question is, from the point of fertilization forward, what changes? And all that changes is the child changes her size, she gets bigger, she gets more developed, and she becomes increasingly independent. But since you were 5, you've increased your size, you've become more developed and increasingly independent. The question is, are human rights grounded in our size, how developed we are, how independent we are, or are human rights grounded in being a member of the human family?
Is that a question for me?
Yeah.
Okay. I would say that makes a very valid point. But first, to just go back as to what you're saying, that I have inconsistencies, you know, with what I'm saying, and I get where you're saying with that. The reason why I would not prefer after the 3 month mark is because that I just think after that point, it can get tricky with complications and things like that, and more for the sake of the mother than anything. But going back to, you know, your other question, can you rephrase that again? That last question?
Sure. So hopefully I can remember where I was going with it. From a human rights perspective, whether someone is religious or not, if we believe humans have human rights, then regardless of how big you are, how developed you are, or how independent you are, isn't all that matters is that you're a member of the human family and we automatically protect you. For example, take the children in foster care that you referenced. They might be technically unwanted insofar as their biological parents aren't caring for them. Maybe they're being abused by their foster parents. Maybe they're not being properly attended to by the government itself through social services. So one could say, well, they're unwanted, but they're being mistreated. But wouldn't we say, well, whether they're wanted is irrelevant. Whether they're mistreated is irrelevant. What's relevant is the child in the foster care system a human being? And if the child is a human being, then doesn't that mean we have a responsibility to protect and nurture that child, regardless of how other people feel about them, regardless of the environment they're in?
Right. Yeah. No, I see your question now. it came back to me. But yeah, no, that does bring up a really good point, and that does make me think, that's for sure. So I can't fully answer it without me diving a little bit deeper into my own thoughts.
Sure.
But okay. Just, you know, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, Samantha, I'm actually just going to leave it there because I would like to get one more person on with Stephanie before we have to go. And I think I can, unless you disagree with me, Stephanie.
If you have to go on, I would just say, Samantha, I really appreciate your questions. I think they're really thoughtful. And the one thing I would suggest, because I didn't have time to elaborate too much on this foster care point, is the website sistersoflife.org. They're an order of nuns in New York that actually welcome pregnant women to live in their convent with them. And they journey with women through their pregnancies. And so I think one of the valid points you make is a need for the pro-life movement to not only object to abortion, but to really walk with women through the difficulties they're in beyond the pregnancy itself. And so sistersoflife.org do an amazing job of that. And they've really brought in my perspective on the things that we as a pro-life movement need to do. So I hope that's a helpful resource to you.
Okay, Samantha.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. I really genuinely appreciate your call. And now we don't have time to go to another caller, so I'm not. But I do think Samantha's... when I hear the point made, Stephanie, that we can't be a society that says we're pro-life, but we're not attentive to the needs of actual real women who get pregnant. We can do a better job of that.
Mm-hmm. We absolutely, you know, the classic slogan is love them both, but it's really true that we have to really journey with people in crisis in order to give them an alternative to the abortion that seems so tempting in our world today.
Stephanie Gray, you can still be, people can find you at Love Unleashes Life on the internet.
Yeah, loveunleasheslife.com.
Congratulations again on the new young Connors coming into the world.
Thank you.
Stephanie Gray Connors has been our guest. Do check out her materials at Love Unleashes Life. And we got to go now. And we'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.
This episode is brought to you by Hallow, the number one Catholic app. Hallow has 1,000 audio-guided prayers and meditations for you to deepen your relationship with God. To listen to all of the Hallow meditations for free for 30 days, head to hallow.com/breadbox.